Metamedia presents New Horizons, conscious conversations for inner exploration and awakening with leading minds in the arts, sciences, astrology, and spirituality.
My guest today is Eric Myers, astrologer, brilliant author of multiple astrology books, and a teacher. He's got decades of experience in counseling and holds two psychology degrees. Eric, welcome to New Horizons. So, Eric, would you a little bit about your background, talk about how you became interested in astrology?
Sure. First of all, thanks, Ray, for having me as a guest. And I always like to chat astrology, and one of my favorite things to do. For me, it all began in my mid-20s, and I went through a whole process of just kind of resolving more skepticism issues. And I just kind of got turned on to the spiritual quest, which led to simply questioning a lot of my assumptions about the way the universe works. And so I just got blown open, and somebody asked me if I ever explored astrology when I was about 25, and I thought it was kind of like a joke. I was like, no, astrology, that's silly. Of course not. And then I was challenged to take a look at it, and so it was almost kind of like my first initial approach was, okay, well, I'm going to look at it so I can see that it doesn't work. And then, of course, like most people, if not all people, I said, well, wait a second. There is something going on here now, isn't there? And so I just kind of drank the Kool-Aid and went into it and just didn't look back. And then it kind of took over my life. And it has, you know, since then.
And over the years, you've done decades of this counseling work using astrological symbolism, configurations, and so forth. Well, my interest was really piqued when I discovered the Astrology of Awakening, the Eclipse of the Ego, Volume 1, and then Volume 2. I was very interested in how you moved everything from the standard brand approach to astrology, how to be a successful lawyer, how to make a lot of money, and all of those things, all the way up to what you're calling and what Dane Rudyard called early on back in 75, a thing called transpersonal astrology or transpersonal level astrology. What is that? How does it relate to Aquarius, for instance, the so-called age of Aquarius?
Back to the first question for my answer is in my mid-20s, I also was in a mainstream psychology doctorate program. And then I was developing my more spiritual interests outside of that. And then I reached a kind of the crossroads where I wanted to leave the more mainstream PhD psych program. And I went out to Boulder, Colorado to study transpersonal psychology. And I got exposed to the work of Ken Wilber and some others. And just looking at things from this broader transpersonal multidimensional lens. And so that became my focus in school at Naropa. So naturally, it became part of the synthesis or the lens to look at astrology itself. And, you know, looking at things from, in my view, the outer planets are more transpersonal. And so, yes, you mentioned Aquarius, that's part of it, but so would be Pisces. And then all of the outer planet with Pluto and Scorpio as well. So just bringing that more non-egoic focus about not judging things as positive or negative, but what is the spiritual purpose? What is the value? What are we learning rather than the prior focus on prediction or is it good or bad or things that are more within the Saturnian relative realm? So that just became my orientation with a transpersonal psychology background to naturally look at the system from that lens.
Don't during the whole process of discussing transpersonal astrology in the first volume of Eclipse of the Ego, you bring up a lot of information about the difference between using astrology to determine what we're capable of, not capable of, rather than looking at it that way. You were looking at how people use the planetary functions, and you talked about egoic takeover, and I'm interested in finding out more about that and how it relates to your work.
Yeah, well, that term, the egoic takeover, was specifically used to discuss how many people view the sun in astrology. And from my knowledge of discussion out there, many people do frame the sun as the ego. And that's the way I was taught, actually. And that's what I've seen pretty popular in the field. So my view is that the sun is about awakening from ego. I really see the moon more about our egoic kinds of drives and desires and what the personality system wants to feel happy and to survive. To me, the sun is about awakening. It's about radiance. It's about essence. It's about a broader soul connection to all of life as the sun radiates out and shines its energy onto all of life. And so the connectedness with life and identifying more as awareness or presence, which is the sun, rather than a personality structure. So to me, sun sign astrology, as well as more of the common framing of the sun, is within a more egoic kind of organization, hence the term the egoic takeover. And so my view is that we need to give the sun back to soul and spirit and see that we're borrowing energy. It's not who we essentially are. And so it's just a shift in our identity. Who are we? Am I energy that is being borrowed from source, or is it all about me?
That's very interesting, because that's the way most people look at their astrological charts. This is all about me. And if you follow quantum physics at all, you finally come to the conclusion that they agree with the cosmologists of today, that the universe is conscious. I mean, one of the authors of a book called The Intelligent Universe, Mr. James Gardner, described in his biocosm concept the idea that the universe was coming to life. How does astrology now have to relate to that concept of you put the sun in the position of the life giver, and if it's conscious, how does that play into this whole idea of transpersonal?
You know, my understanding at a spiritual level, we're all part of a universal interconnected field of awareness and presence that runs through everything. And I like the analogy of the eternal fire that you find in a lot of spiritual traditions and religious paths. And so if you think of the sun almost like a candle, like if you have a candle and you light it off the big fire, we're bridging the oneness of all universal energy awareness with the connection to the physical, which would be the moon and the earth realm. And so we're like a candle. And it's like, if you look at my body, it's like the wick, and then the sun is the flame. And so we're borrowing the flame from oneness, bridging it to separation. So the sun is almost the mediating energy between separation, physical, and the broader field of awareness, the transpersonal. So the sun is our connection, our soul connection to spirit, that is the intermediary to the physical, is the way that I would see it.
So how does the concept of spiritual awakening play into all this? Because you see it all over the internet. People here and there talk about it in a blasé kind of attitude. But I'd like to really talk about that with you. What is spiritual awakening, and how does it fit into the transpersonal view?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a challenging topic because I don't claim to be enlightened, and it's more theoretical in my situation, like most, I would imagine. So I'm a work in progress like everyone else, so I don't claim expertise, but I'm a seeker and a student of these things. So, but in my understanding is that we can only identify within the more separation level, which is where we basically all begin. And we look out for personality and more individualistic needs. And my understanding is that the more that we do spiritually mature or awaken, we are less identified with that. We are much more able to be with what is. The personality attachments and the urgency of those things tend to be falling away to some degree. And we just abide with what is. We are able to trust life, to be in harmony and flow, and to cooperate with the intelligence that contains us, rather than having our own ideas about how things should go based on some kind of egoic agenda for money or for status or what have you. And so the tricky part is that we always do continue to reside in separation. We are physical. We have, you know, egoic needs. Those are always legitimate. So to me, it isn't about transcending, but it's about finding a synthesis or marriage to bring heaven to earth, to synthesize the transpersonal with the personal, not to bypass the personal. So that's the tricky part of the conversation. And when we do that, then we tend to be less urgent around an agenda. We tend to be more connected to our soul intentions and the astrology that's naturally unfolding. The transits just will play out. We flow with the currents rather than having an agenda that the current must go this way. I need to have $1 million and have blah, blah, blah. And so it's abiding with our soul intentions within the personality orientation is the way that I see this synthesis.
So you mentioned a couple of times this concept idea of separation consciousness. Could you go into that, how you come to understand separation consciousness, say, from other levels of consciousness?
Well, that to me originates with the moon. And the moon, like in the sky, is more or less, you know, a physical object. That's a rock. And our physical body has a skin. We have a definition within separation. And things that are beyond the parameter of our skin are not us. So there's separation. You, Ray, are different than me, Eric. You're different than what's in my skin parameter. And so the physical, the moon, is the orientation, in my view, at that level. And then the sun, which the energy does not exist within the parameters of our skin, but we all radiate out, we all project out, we all have an energy body that connects us to oneness, like I said earlier, with the flame, with the sun. So to me, separation consciousness, the egoic needs, the personality structure is rooted within the moon, and the profile within someone's chart reveals what those tendencies and issues would be.
You also, in relationship to the same idea, have talked about the solar system from the sun out to Saturn as being the arena of separation consciousness, and that transpersonal was some way of being able to inform the separation consciousness of the possibility that there was more. Could you talk more about that?
Yeah, well, that does go with it. The Saturnian realm sets up, you know, Saturn goes with Kronos, time, and the organization of things at the consensus level, the world of separation, where you and I are different and everything else has its own boundaries. And so we can see that also within the astrological system. The moon, as I talked about, is the rootedness within that. And the moon, of course, goes with the sign of Cancer. And then Saturn goes with the sign of Capricorn. And so we see the polarity of separation consciousness and how we mature. Saturn within that goes with Cancer and Capricorn and Saturn and the moon. Then the sun, thematically or archetypally going along with Leo and Uranus with Aquarius, they too form a polarity that go with the energy body, with the sun, how we exist beyond separation, and Uranus, Aquarius, is the organization of the transpersonal, of oneness, that other dimension that is beyond separation. So Saturn is the overarching kind of organization of the separate world. And so for almost all of history, Saturn has been known as the most outermost planet until, 240 years ago when Uranus was discovered. And so our traditions, including astrology, and our understanding of things, and even the way we organize the calendar, we got 7 days of the week that are named after the seven visible planets. I mean, all of life has mainly been organized within the Saturnian realm because it's the most obvious, it's where we've been, and it's a valid level of reality. It's just not the final authority anymore. And so we need the courage to modernize and update because we have discovered these other dimensions and these other planets. And so that gives us the real tricky, lesson of how do you integrate with these things, or we can ignore them.
Well, it seems like astrology grew up during the period of time that Saturn was the furthest out visible planet, visible with the naked eye. And so the restrictive kind of function of Saturn, or the formative kind, seems to be astrology working in that period of time in a kind of a dualistic way.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, it is. Everything within the relative Saturnian realm tends to be dualistic. And Mercury is the mindset, which is dualistic. And it serves survival and the egoic needs for happiness to look at things dualistically. It is going to be healthy to eat vegetables. That's good. It's going to be unhealthy to eat little metal pieces of trash. That's bad. That's not good. So it serves us to evaluate things from the mercurial level. That's a valid energy. It's just not the only one. And when we get to Uranus, we don't look at things dualistically, but we look at things from a different lens of what is the spiritual value of things. Everything that spirit has created has a purpose, has a value. I like the quote from Leonardo da Vinci that says, nature in all of its beauty is perfect. There's nothing that's superfluous. Everything has a value or purpose or meaning to it in some kind of way. So at the Uranian level, we look at things from that lens. What are we learning? We might learn something by not eating metal pieces. That might teach us something. It's everything can be looked at as a teacher rather than just judging it as positive or negative.
So when you're looking at an astrological chart, for instance, of an individual, how do you speak to the egoic person about their spiritual reality using astrological symbols? For instance, in your book, Volume 1, Awakening of the Ego, The Astrology of Awakening is the title of the book, you talk about a couple of pyramids, one upside, one's upside down, liberating and manifesting. I'm going to put a graphic up on the screen. What we have here is what you call the liberating pyramid. And I'd really like you to walk us through what this is, because The real question is, how do you inform the ego of the possibility that there's more to life than what it is currently feeling or living like?
We're talking about two different things here at the same time. Yeah. Is that when I work with clients, I do not bring in spiritual philosophy about earth and water levels and what have you, because you're asking how does it pertain with clients. I generally do not do that with clients. And so what we're looking at here is more theoretical or philosophical of an overarching understanding of bringing elemental understandings to levels of reality. So earth with the physical, water with the emotional, air with the mental or intellectual, and fire at the soul level, is that, you know, in general, we do see this ascending channel or liberating pyramid, is that we initially, life itself originates from the earth, from the soil. And then we can have the biological level, anything that requires water emerges from the earth, like a carrot or an animal needs water for sustenance. And then the air level is what, you know, the next level is more advanced mental functioning, more sophisticated human conceptual archetypal understandings, and then possibility of the top of the pyramid, theoretically more awakening or enlightenment, the fire, the sun, as we talked about before, where we can identify as presence and awareness and things that are not egoic. So the earth, water, and air levels in this model are more of the separation and personality. We have a body, we have a heart, we have a mind, and then the soul level, the fire level, can be realized should we be able to grow spiritually in such a way, which a lot of spiritual practice is all about. But it's not something I take clients through. I'm looking at their chart with them, and I'm always sensitive to that we always begin at the more personality egoic level that's never bypassed, but also welcoming looking at things from a transpersonal view as well.
But still, at the same time, even though it is a theoretical, philosophical approach to the organization of thinking with regard to the process of how people go from earth to the source, fire, it does seem that when you're talking to an earth level situation, which is almost literally everybody, there is a way of using this to see where your client is in their own development in terms of how they're hearing what you're saying, how they're understanding the process that you're discussing with them. And I understand you don't do that. You don't bring that in that level, but you do yourself in understanding your clients' responses to what you're telling them about their astrological chart. For instance, I can do a reading for an hour or two with somebody, and at the end of it all, though I've said everything that I could possibly say, they want to know, well, what about my relationships? And the whole thing was how relate, because they have a smaller image of relationship. That's the earthly level. And the water level is the emotional feeling of being in relationship. Mm-hmm. And the air level, you know, they have an intellectual understanding that astrology is about what's out there and my little minuscule relationship to that. And if you're feeling them at the earth level and the water, the feeling that they have in response, there's an intellectual awakening to the possibility that it's possible to get closer to the source. Is that kind of like the message that you are really delivering, not only with your clients, but in this book?
In Astrology Awakening, Volume 2, I do outline more of the approach for clients. And the basic schema of the approach I have is looking at the moon as more rooted, I guess you could say, in the earth level. And I talk about the moon as the seed. I talk about the nodes of the moon as the gardening, the spiritual lessons and work connected to our initial representation of ourselves at the earth level. And then the sun is the flowering into spiritual realization. And so I look at that trajectory. Initially, we're going to be in the spiritual childhood. We all are, the seed or acorn level. And then the nodal axis is more or less a lot of the spiritual lessons to resolve the karmic tendencies or patterns that we all create from our initial focus on that realm. And if that can be attended to and more resolved, then it allows the flower to grow more fully into its blossoming and fullness, is the basic idea, which does parallel, you know, what you see in this pyramid with the motion of the more egoic levels to ultimately something more blossoming at a soul level. And so with chart application volume 2, I look at the moon as where we fundamentally begin in the identification and attachments at the personality egoic level. And then how do we mature, loosen that, and ultimately blossom into soul realization, which is to me the sun.
So I wanted to talk about the other direction. We've been talking about actually spiritual awakening with that first liberating pyramid, liberating from ego boundaries, the Saturnian boundaries, and joining the Aquarian boundaries, the transformational boundaries, where we recognize our essential unity, and that gives us new life in the form of Pluto, right? But then, this is manifesting pyramid here. It reminds me of something that I heard Dane Ridger say in conversation about the idea of transpersonal astrology, level of transpersonal level, where if you reach up high enough and put up enough of your consciousness to that level, there will be a descending response. And so this manifesting pyramid and liberating pyramid really reminded me of that conversation, but that was him. I want to ask you how this relates to what we're talking about in terms of spiritual awakening, the manifesting.
Well, I wouldn't say it is about spiritual awakening. It's about the opposite. It's about how oneness, the fire level, breaks down to separation. So you can see the manifesting pyramid is, think of the fire level as the broadest level from this viewpoint, where oneness, and then separating down, it gets narrower and chooses a astrology chart at the conceptual level, a soul plan for the incarnation, and then the water level, entering the waters of the womb at the biological level. And then we get born and we come out on the earth level at the bottom. And then we immediately begin the liberating channel, where the earth is our foundation with the other pyramid. And then we're awakening back. So the universe is constantly almost breathing in and out between oneness and separation, the liberating and the manifesting. And so to me, the heliocentric chart and the heliocentric perspective is from the fire level, everything revolving around the sun, Helios. And it's not egoic, and it gives a whole other view astrologically from another dimension. And so where Earth is on the chart, and we're coming, what's going, manifesting, you know, on the soul level down on planet Earth is what the manifesting heliocentric dimension, which is not about ego. It's not about personality stuff. And so more or less the idea is, if we get ourselves out of the way, if we resolve the karma and the attachments of the geocentric liberating dimension, then we can more or less make room to be more inhabited with our soul intentions and just let that run the show. And we are partnering with that. We're manifesting soul on the earth plane. It's coming through us. That's if we can get our personality agendas and all of our preoccupation with self, the work of the geocentric chart. And so what is an important point to make is, unfortunately, in these discussions, much of what people unfortunately hear is value judgments, like the geocentric or the ego is bad or wrong or less. It's not. That's not the point at all. And it is unfortunate that people view it that way. It's not any better or worse than beginning as a child when we're born. It's not wrong to be less developed. It's just beautiful and fine. And there's nothing wrong with being young in the soul journey. And then we mature and we become more realized, and then spirit plays hide and seek, you know, and separation to oneness and back again. It's almost an elaborate game of hide and seek, but there's nothing wrong with being at any place in the process. It's not better or worse. It's just different levels of maturation back to remembering and reconnecting with the source or not. That's the game, so to speak. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with earlier stages of development. It's totally fine and beautiful. And then we are maturing. And then we have all of eternity, hypothetically, theoretically, to reach soul realization. There's no clock. There's no race. We can play out as many lifetimes as we want. And then ultimately, as the sages say, we'll all will eventually get there because we all have all of eternity to figure it out. And then the game will resume and will manifest, and there's other, you know, evolutionary trajectories that we might do. So I like the metaphor of hide and seek that I've heard from some spiritual teachers.
Really exciting conversation I'm having here. So many different ideas are coming into my mind that relate to what you wrote in your book. But one of them involves the idea that you just described, that we have to use astrology at the level of a separation consciousness. You have to start somewhere. So basically you're saying we have to start with where we are.
Yeah, there's no transcending the physical. As long as you have a body, as long as you have emotions, as long as you have a mind, as long as you are alive, we of course are going to be at the egoic personality level. The issue is, how attached are we? How identified are we within those things? Or are we able to see that the body can be a tool that we're using rather than our identification? Like when you are using a wrench to fix a bike, the wrench is a tool that you are using to fix the bike. We don't identify as the wrench. And same thing, we can identify the body as a tool we are using for our soul rather than who we fundamentally think we are. It's like the costume. We are renting it for 80 or 100 years or whatever, but we have to give it back. It's not fundamentally who we are. It's what we're renting and using for the soul journey. So the question isn't about transcendence of the personality and the body. It's about identification and attachment to it.
I see. Mentioned a couple of times the concept of heliocentric astrology. Can you talk a little bit more about how geocentric and heliocentric astrology play roles with respect to this whole idea that we're just now discussing?
Yeah, well, I touched on that before. Is to me the liberating channel is described by the geocentric chart, and the manifesting channel is described by the heliocentric chart. And so they're two fundamentally different dimensions of experience. The personality and its reconciliation and releasing the attachment for blossoming, and then what is manifesting through us, should we get out of the way, is what the heliocentric chart points to. So my experience is that the more we do get ourselves out of the way, so to speak, and resolve the work at the egoic personality level, the more the heliocentric chart becomes relevant and it kind of becomes animated. And we learn to see the value in it and identify in it, the more mature spiritually we become. If we aren't very spiritually awake or mature, the heliocentric chart is very irrelevant because we're not able to make room for it. We are so urgently preoccupied with our egoic agenda that there's no room to just be a conduit for our soul. So I have found that in just in my own sense, the more that I feel like I'm spiritually maturing, I see more relevance to my heliocentric chart. But many people do have the sensation who study astrology, they look at their heliocentric chart and they don't identify, they don't get it, because it's less relevant if we aren't really maturing into it. And so it's just a whole other type of astrology with different mindset, even different rules, so to speak. It doesn't have the same logic as the geocentric chart. And it's largely undiscovered territory. There's been some written about it, Michael Erlewine, Philip Sedgwick, and a few others, but not much. But it's an area that I'm going to be researching more and writing about and really dedicating much of my life to it, not too far down the road. I've got a few other things I want to work on first, but then I'm going to really research and develop more of my thinking of how to approach the heliocentric chart. I have been using it for about 12 years. I work with it with clients, but I haven't written about it and I don't claim expertise at this point because it largely is undiscovered territory that I'm still a novice, I would say. So I don't feel like I have the expertise yet. So I'm still a work in progress with it.
One thing I do understand about heliocentric astrology, I got from what has been written, and I've been largely in disagreement with it, because as you have really pointed out, that we have to live in these two dimensions at the same time, simultaneously be a separate individual and also allow the soul experience to run the show, which is the Uranian, Neptunian, Pluto transpersonal level of the solar system. Yet, some people writing about heliocentric astrology tell me that the houses are irrelevant. Absolutely not, in my opinion, because in heliocentric astrology, you know, the view is from the sun. And the argument has been, well, you don't live on the sun, so there can't be any houses. I'm sorry. We do live on the sun. We live in the womb of the sun. And according to astronomical data, the sun occupies 99.86% of all of the energy that exists in the solar system. So for all intents and purposes, we are the sun, this flame, this candle that borrowed a piece of it. What was that Greek guy who tried to get a piece, got too close to the sun and got burnt? Yeah.
Icarus, yes.
Yeah, so we have that kind of situation with constantly telling us to, well, spirituality and God consciousness and all that, that's not possible unless you follow the dogmatic religions that have existed and grown up and invented literally, during the period of time that Saturn was the furthest out planet that we could see. I wanted to ask you what you've already answered, so I'm probably not going to be able to ask you that again, but, you know, what are you going to be doing over the next few years? Because the situation on the planet is growing dire by the moment. And there are those people who are spiritually involved thinking, oh, don't worry about it. We're spirits. We live forever. It's okay. The earth will recover. And my answer has always been, what about all the suffering? Then they bring Buddhism into it. And I say, okay, I'm a Buddhist. I understand. But still, how can, from your perspective, astrology play a role in readying people for the task of the next 20, 30 years?
Well, that's a big question. And I do think that astrology does provide, I like to call it the owner's manual for the car we're driving, of how we can navigate most consciously. So, you know, the thing about it is that astrology points to information. It doesn't do the work. It doesn't do it for you. And you still got to navigate the territory. But having the map, having the owner's manual is helpful. And being able to use it as a guide is the appropriate function with astrology. But to answer more of your question, what am I going to be doing? Yes, I will. Like I mentioned, I'll be working on and developing heliocentric probably in the latter part of this decade. Currently, I am interested in potentially launching a podcast with a friend that might be called Entering the Age of Aquarius, of how do we modernize not only with astrology, but on this planet across the board with political, economic, social, cultural things. How can we shift to a more transpersonal type of integration in general? And also have a book that I am finishing called Seasons of the Moon, which is more of a geocentric thing about looking at the rhythms of the seasons as the template for the personality motion through, you know, just looking at seasons. A lot of times the signs are not always looked at for their seasonal underpinnings. Like Virgo is a summer sign. Sagittarius is an autumn sign. Gemini is a spring sign, and understanding things from a seasonal rhythm. So I've been writing that book for a few years, and I'm going to complete that, is what I want to do. It's almost done. I was actually writing it before I wrote the book on the Beatles that I spent a few years writing, and I want to go back to completing that book that was left off.
Yeah, the Beatles, that's the thing I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
How did that come about? You wrote an astrological view of the Beatles. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it kind of tapped me on the shoulder. Again, I was writing this other book, and I was about maybe three quarters of the way done with writing the book. And I was looking at Paul McCartney's chart as one of the chart examples for this other book. And I was exploring McCartney's chart, and I got into it, and I had an epiphany. I was like, wait a second, let me look at Lennon's chart and Harrison for a minute. I looked at their charts, and I just had this whole rush of epiphanies go on. And I'm like, I think I need to write a book on the astrology of the Beatles. And I figured it would be a good way to bring the full expression of my astrological approach and abilities up to this point into one subject matter and flesh it out with a lot of detail. So I looked at everything to do with who they were individually, their composite charts between them, all of the music, all of the major events in their biography. It's 500 pages. And so it's just the expression, because what I found their message and what they were about was very much paralleling what I'm about. They were really singing and writing about not only the sun in the same way that I speak about it, and the solar thread became the most dominant thread in the analysis of their message, and relating a lot of what they were about to metaphysical, spiritual, astrological things that the astrology reveals that their song lyrics are reflecting. So I just really found like-minded allies within this soul group, and their work seemed to gel with mine. And I've always been a Beatle fan and drawn to them from a very young age. So the whole thing was more or less me doing something more fun than writing philosophical books about liberating and manifesting channels all the time.
So, Eric, I want to ask you one more question, and that has to do with the asteroid known as Chiron. How does that play into this whole relationship between Saturn and Uranus? Because it does orbit between those two planets.
Yes, it does. You know, Chiron for me, about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago at this point, really emerged in an enormous importance to me. I had the Uranus-Pluto square many years ago was exactly on my Chiron at around 13 Aries at the time. And I went through quite a challenging passage at that time. And the idea of feeling splintered, that word kept on coming up. I felt splintered. And, you know, Chiron is known for being the so-called wounded healer. And I think there is relevance in that idea. You know, healing the bump and grind of how we get thrown out of alignment in the Saturnian realm of separation. And even chiropractor has the same root, and a chiropractor helps get us back into alignment. And so we can then heal and heal the splintering, heal the alignment, so we can feel like we can navigate the transpersonal waters from a healed vessel of the physical self. Because if the physical self is out of kilter, let's say we are grossly out of weight, we have lung cancer from smoking, we are completely ignoring the physical vessel, how in the world are we going to be soul embodied if we can't even, you know, walk around in ourself? So we need to heal, we need to cleanse, we need to get the physical system energetic attunement. So there's the bridging of the physical with the metaphysical. So to me, anything really at a metaphysical fair is kind of Chiron modalities and tools in order to get right alignment with your soul. So I think it's incredibly important. And I think that the proliferation in the 70s, when Chiron was discovered, of things that are now at metaphysical fairs and all of those wonderful modalities and techniques that people are using are very helpful to get in right alignment. And so it's going to show us where we're not in alignment, where we might be splintered or fragmented in our physical self.
The way you describe that in your book is a very simple: continue sufferance or heal it.
Again, my Chiron's at 13 Aries, so I just had that. Here we are speaking in 2023. And I did. I went through a period where I felt a similar sense of splintering or fragmentation or difficulty feeling in right alignment. And now it's subsiding and I feel more myself. But it gave me a big check-in of, am I really in that alignment or not? So Chiron transits can give you that progress note.
Eric, thanks so much for spending the time with us today. I appreciate it very much. I look forward to hearing more and seeing more of your work. So thanks again.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Enjoyed this topic? Support Future Consciousness Raising podcast by visiting newhorizonspodcast.org.